Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your hosts from 970 ESPN and Steelers Nation Radio, David Todd, and from SteelersDepot.com, Dave Bryan. Just a couple of Daves chilling, talking Steelers. Now, here's Dave and Dave.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave, Season 7, Episode 116. I'm Dave Bryan from SteelersDepot.com, and sitting in once again for the kind of vacationing David Todd right now. He's busy kind of getting some things reordered kind of in his day-to-day life right now is Alex Kozora, also from SteelersDepot.com. Alex, happy Friday, and welcome to the weekend.
Happy Friday, Dave. Everything neat and tidy in mom's basement, so all good here.
Let's see here, you know, the Steelers, let's just get started with this and get this kind of out of the way, just so people can kind of know what may or may not happen on the podcast here over the course of the next, week or 4 weeks, I should say, 6 weeks or so. My dad, as many have mentioned, on the site already and on the podcast, my dad recently had surgery to he had a kidney and his spleen removed after they found some cancerous tumors on those. Well, the oncology report has now come back, and my dad found out on Thursday that he's probably got about 4 months or less to live. So I am obviously going to have to fly back and forth to Florida here, probably 3 weeks from now, maybe sooner, maybe a little bit later, and then of course there's going to be trips after that as well too. Now when I do go out of town, obviously Alex will be running the site along with the great Matthew Marksey and our other great fine contributors. There will of course be no podcast when I am out of town though, and there probably isn't going to be much heads up on a Monday or a Friday right now when something like that happens. I'll try to, if I think about it for a league, go out of town, let our listeners know. But hopefully when I do make these travels, I think my first one may be 3 weeks from now. The Steelers mandatory minicamp, I think, will be over at that point. So we'll be pretty much in the very, very dead zone. Deadest zone of the offseason as well too. So I appreciate everybody that's reached out to me on Twitter so far. I don't keep really a lot of aspects of my life private. As far as that stuff, I'm really an open book in all aspects of my day-to-day life and craziness and everything that goes along with that. So I appreciate the people that have reached out to me on Twitter already. And more than anything, pray for a minor miracle. And if you don't want to go that route, pray for my mom, because she's going to have the one that's really having the hardest time with this right now. She'd been with my father since the two, I think, were 15, 16 years old, and they're, of course, both in their 70s now. So definitely a tough time for our family, and I appreciate, like I said, everybody reaching out to me. Alex, with that said, the second week of OTAs came to an end on Thursday for the Steelers. We have a lot of little tidbits to kind of get to. It's like we don't have a lot of major big storylines, but we do have a lot of tidbits. And I guess the place to start will be kind of chronological, where we kind of left off on Monday, and since then, I think the day after or so, the Steelers signed a free agent. And really an under the radar kind of free agent as well in safety Damian Stafford, who was originally a seventh round draft pick in 2013 of the Tennessee Titans, played the last four seasons there in Tennessee. And I haven't seen the contract numbers yet, but I can't imagine that it's anything more than the league minimum on a one-year deal. And this is, I've gone and looked at his tape already. I know you've already done a little bit of a breakdown on him as well, and Steelers Depot as well. This is not a sexy signing by any stretch of the imagination, but it is However, a very Kevin Colbert Steelers-like end of May type of signing. And Stafford, you know, big kid, a little bit over 6 foot, over 200 pounds. I think he had to lose something like 10 pounds before the Steelers, you know, agreed to sign him. But a guy that I think when you look at his film, plays well within the box against the run. And, man, this guy can play some special teams.
You're right, Dave. I think you phrased it well, a very Kevin Colbert signing. It's not sexy, but it's solid, especially for this time of year when obviously the free agent market is pretty thin. And I think the Steelers did well to add another name guy, a guy with Sunday experience into that, you know, room at safety that is lacking depth. They have their four guys, but beyond that, there isn't really a whole lot there. So I think it makes the back end of that roster a whole lot more competitive and, for our purposes, a lot more interesting. Now, you looked at him from a defensive, you know, standpoint, what he's done as a starter. Matthew Marquis floated the idea of him possibly being a dime safety, which is he's got a little bit of doing that in Tennessee with Dick LeBeau. I looked at him from a special teams perspective, which, of course, is going to be his number one key to making this team, and I think it's solid. He's a versatile guy. He was a core special teamer the last 2 years. I think he led him in special team tackles in 2015, and you know, he's a guy that probably could, you know, make a push for that right wing spot on the punt coverage unit to start things off, because that spot's kind of fluid, and he's a good hitter. He's got good effort. I think he's a solid open field tackler. You know, I don't know for sure if he's going to make the team. Obviously, you know, his situation being a late free agent signing, but, you know, I think he's going to really make a good push to try to either convince the team to keep five safeties or even, you know, and this is kind of unlikely, but push for Dangerfield or Golden's job.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think another thing that needs to be mentioned with him, I think he was a co-captain on special teams last year with, who was it, Wesley Woodard there. I think him and Damian Stafford were kind of co-special teams captains in Tennessee last year. Look, I mean, you can never have enough of these kinds of guys, right?
Right, exactly.
You know, the guys that you know, that do the dirty work. The safety version of Antoine Blake a few years ago. I don't know.
Yeah, that's a good call.
You know, that kind of thing. So, look, when we went into this week, if there was a position group outside of linebacker, inside linebacker, where you said, where's the kind of depth at here? You know, I think you could have immediately went to the safety position and said, you know, it'd be nice to see another, you know, more experienced body that can play special teams be added there. And lo and behold, that's what Stafford is. So, too early to call and judge how this one will ultimately play out, but, you know, as you mentioned, and I think Matthew Marks has kind of written as well, too, this is great competition for guys like Robert Golden and Jordan Dangerfield.
Yeah, and that's the way I look at it. And it's probably more Dangerfield than Golden. I think Golden spot's a little safer because he has been the core, you know, captain, special teamer, and you know, is probably more the next man up at safety than Dangerfield. But again, the other option could be that they keep five safeties, because we thought before the Stafford signing it was going to be six corners and four safeties, and it still certainly could. But now, you know, I think looking at the cornerback room, a guy like Brian Allen saying, you know, I better watch out. I mean, I'm sure that was his thought process already, but, you know, there's a potential now that they keep five and five. So I think it gives the roster construction a little more flexibility than what they had before the signing.
Absolutely. So, you know, look, will we be treated to another, you know, it's not uncommon this time of year to have, you know, a kind of signing like that at this time of year. Now, obviously, the further you get into the offseason, the less likely you're going to sign a guy that might have the potential to make the 53-man roster, such as the case with Stafford. Because, I mean, let's face it, those guys are about off the street now. And in fact, kind of in a similar situation, the New York Jets signed Shamarco Thomas to a contract on Thursday as well too. And look, I understand the Jets just recently made a deal, you know, with the Browns and all, and, you know, a lot of people people were viewing maybe Thomas as being the addition now to help replace him and a lock to make the 53-man roster over there. I don't think that's the case. You know, anybody added this late in the offseason by no means should be considered a lock, and such is the case with Stafford. However, I am interested to watch this guy play some special teams, and I'll kind of leave it with that.
Let me ask you this real quick, Dave, because I know you always have the list. How many or if any of these June-type signings have made the roster in Kevin Colbert's era? Do you have any data you can pull up on that?
Cause I know you kind of I do have that data. I don't have it in front of me, and instead of making 45 loud click strokes on my oversized handicapped person's keyboard. You know, my wife kids me all the time. She says, "Boy, I can tell when news breaks up there because it sounds like you're coming through the upstairs because I got this keyboard. I bought me one of these handicapped keyboards with the because I can't type. It's got these oversized keys on it, and when you hit them, I mean they make a louder noise than." than most keyboards. So me and my two-finger typing whenever news breaks, I'm trying to get a post up on my end. It probably sounds like the world's coming to an end downstairs to my wife there. But I'll remind me to effort that, Alex. And we'll, you know, if you're doing a show with me on Monday, we'll kind of go over that data again. But I mean, look, in the past they've added guys like, you know, Antoine Blake. I mean, they added him right before the start of a season back when
those were like cut down guys.
Right, cut down guys. But as far as guys signed, oh geez, I'm sure it's happened. Obviously it probably doesn't happen very often because of those type players. But I'll try to, you know, that might be something for me to kind of write about as well.
Yeah, I think it'd be a good topic.
All right, a lot of little, like we said, little tidbits from this past week, and I guess we should move on to some injury news and some injury updates. James Conner was doing something this week, so there's your news on James Conner. One thing that I still think he's very, very limited with that hamstring. And in fact, when there was a video posted by one of the beat writers, the first thing that jumped out to me was that Conner had longer pants on and not football pants. So those look like, I don't know, some sort of compression pants maybe. Something maybe help keep that hamstring a little bit warmer. Maybe he's hiding a wrap up underneath there. I don't know. But, you know, the good news is he's doing something. The bad news is it doesn't look like he's still going full. And, you know, with the third week of OTAs right around the corner, we'll have to just wait and see what happens there. Stephon Tuitt, obviously, hand surgery, probably, you know, not doing much of anything. You got guys like Sean Davis, you know, coming off of shoulder surgery. Vince Williams coming off of shoulder surgery. Those guys are probably just, you know, out there doing the bare minimum conditioning. I think Davis talked about running some gassers the other day, and you know, I imagine Tuitt's, you know, keeping up with the cardio as well. We did get kind of something new when it comes to Tyson Alualu, you know, something that I don't think any of us knew heading into this week, and that's the fact that he's been kind of hampered by a calf injury of some sort, and I think he's hopeful to maybe start ramping it up next week, third week of OTAs. We'll have to see. The good news when it comes to Alualu is that so far during his career, he has not missed a game due to injury. Now, he did miss two games last year at the start of the season, but those were coaches' decisions with him being inactive. So, you know, on the surface, one would think and hope that, you know, this is just the kind of off-season bumps and bruises some of these guys have to recover from. So, color me not too concerned there when it comes to him. Now, one other player, now this happened during Thursday's practice, and it's obviously worth keeping an eye on, is Javon Hargrave went down with some sort of injury. I think I think it may have been a shoulder injury. I'm not 100% sure. He did walk off, according to the report on PennLive.com. We'll have to wait and see. There are already some short lines on defensive line with Alualu and now Javon Hargrave. So it'll be interesting to see, and maybe we'll have a small hint come to start of next week whether or not the Steelers make a roster move.
The lines are getting thin.
Right, because those lines are getting thin. So not much really to report about Javon Hargrave right now other than he did leave practice. I don't want to speculate too much and say it's not serious, but it's kind of been the grumblings from what I can gather so far on the internets. So with that, Alex, who have I left off that banged up or bruised up right now?
No, I think that's most of them. Hargrave's the only one that's really on my radar right now, though a guy like, Lualu, if you've never been really hurt before in your NFL career and he's got a great track record, you want to make sure you're not pushing it too much and coming back too soon. So hopefully he takes the advice of the trainers, and it seems like he is, so hopefully he can get back as well. But we talked about the importance of Hargrave and the lack of depth in nose tackle, and Dan McCullers has just never been able to come close to being that guy. So certainly don't want anything to happen there with Hargrave long term, but you don't want to be alarmist about it. We have no idea the severity of the injury, and hopefully we get some clarity next week.
Yeah, and we'll find, I without a doubt, I think we'll find out real quick whether or not he's out there doing something at all, and hopefully it isn't serious or something like a torn pec or something like that. I mean, this is the time of the off season when unfortunately those types of injuries start creeping up here. I'm trying to scan down here to see if there was anybody else I missed. I think Trey Williams has kind of been sidelined with something that he's dealing with, but he's a back of the roster running back anyways, and I'm not really seeing I don't think anything else there. I don't think I think we missed there, Alex. So being as how we're talking about defensive line there and something that we really haven't broken down, or it has been a while since we talked about the depth of the defensive line. The team obviously went out and signed Alualu during the offseason. You would think that Javon Hargrave would be set to be more than just a nose tackle in 2017, potentially maybe picking up a few more snaps. Obviously he had to play a lot last year with Cameron Hayward going down. Talk a little bit about what you perceive happening with hopefully a healthy Hargrave, and then what you think is going to happen behind guys like Tuitt and Hayward as far as rotations, and will we finally see kind of a little bit more reduction in overall snap count for those two starters?
Well, that's been the goal the last couple of years, and it just usually does end up happening when they're out there and healthy, and I get less and less convinced that it's really ever going to happen just because they are so talented and they are great conditioning and the leadership they provide out there, and I just don't think they're going to see a whole lot of reduction. I think Hargrave could pick up a couple of snaps in the nickel, but it's going to be dominated by Tuitt and Hayward. And they go out and they sign, Alualu, and he's going to pick up some of those leftover scraps. So I don't know if Hargrave's snap count is going to expand too much, because I don't think there's a whole lot of spots open for him right now. But one thing that they could do is with Hargrave's talent, is stay in their 3-4 base more often and either walk out an outside linebacker to cover a slot guy if you're playing some more zone, or roll a safety down over the slot and play single high. So that might be one way to get Hargrave on the field more, is playing your base, because it's going to help your run defense, and you just get your talent out there. You get some better pass rusher out there. So that's one idea that I could see them happening. I know people talk about every year, and I'm sure we'll hear it again, the 3-3-5, but that has not happened yet, and I don't really expect it to happen. But I think there's the potential for them trying to stay in base a little more, being more stout against the run, and keeping a talent like Hargrave out on the field.
With Hargrave, look, make no mistake, however they do it this year, they've got to get better and more consistent pressure with 4-man rushes.
Mm-hmm.
Plain
That's
and simple. Yep. And I, unless you get goal line situations or something like that, I think I've seen enough of only rushing three and dropping eight. You know, I mean, I understand the reason for that. You can create a lot of confusion with that, especially if you have kind of that amoeba look at the line of scrimmage, people walking around. You know, they confused the hell out of, who was it, Matt Hasselbeck a few years ago, doing that kind of stuff. In fact, I think, wasn't that when Jarvis Jones had his first and only interception in that game? Wasn't that on a three-man
first
rush?
Yep, first drive of the game for the Colts. Yep.
Right, you know, those kind of things. But it will be interesting to see how Javon Hargrave is used outside of base. Now, Hargrave played, correct me if I'm wrong, Alex, I mean, he was almost 500 snaps last year, it seems like. It seemed like the number was around 46 or 47% of the total defensive snaps. And you got to keep in mind that that happened because, you know, with Cameron Hayward off the field. Of course, Tuitt was kind of banged up as well, too, for a little bit. You think Hargrave hits 475 snaps this year?
Yeah, I remember Ricardo Matthews was hurt down the stretch as well.
That's true.
That ankle injury. So Hargrave had a lot of opportunity. You know, his snap count, I think it's probably going to come down. If we assume health, he's not going to have the opportunity. He's not going to play in nickel as much. So it could be around 400 this year. I mean, again, I think they're going to try to find extra ways to get him on the field now that they have a full year of knowing about what Hargrave is and how good he is and wanting to get him on the field. They're going to try to find ways to do that. But there is a limit when you're competing with Tua and Hayward. Hayward, your leader in Tua, you know, a budding star. So I think it might be around 400, but the quality is going to be better, and Hargrave's going to hopefully get to play a little fresher and obviously be in a lot better football shape, you know, the second time around. So I think the quality of the snaps are going to be even better than what happened last year, and that's the important thing for me.
Yeah, and he's not going to be a rookie. He's going to know what the hell he's doing out there.
Exactly.
So, I mean, basically, lower, you know, 400 snaps. Maybe that's a good over and under to kind of work with, or maybe I'll throw that out. See, I'm developing Friday night questions. I cheat all along. Anytime I could cheat, but I think that would be a good over and under, right? 400 snaps for Hargrave, and I think if he's right around that number, I think overall that's a great sign, right?
Yeah, and the way I expect it to go is, you know, you'll have your three down front of Tuitt, Hargrave, and Hayward. Then your backup, Alualua, at one end spot. I think right end. I can't remember where Walton plays. And then Walton at left end. And you'll get some mixing and matching, of course. But they like to usually have these guys play on the ends, at least play on a side. So Tuitt on one side, Hayward on the other. You know, Walton and Alualua the same. So they're going to get some play time as well because, you know, they signed Alualua for a reason. And Walton has made some progress. And he's strong against the run. He offers nothing as a pass rusher, but he's play a lot better against the run. So you got to think those guys are going to get a little bit of opportunity as well.
And Alualu, to see, you know, let's assume, you know, that gets his calf injury behind him and starts the season. And okay, you know, probably what, 5 to 8 snaps a game at the start of the season. And as we get into a little bit deeper into season, maybe 10 to 12 to even 15 if the Steelers are actually winning big in the fourth quarter or something.
Yeah, probably around there. And Walton's going to have to struggle just to get a helmet. So we do want to qualify with that. If there's an injury there, that, of course, change things. But he's kind of the odd man, you know, outside looking in right now. But, yeah, that's my thought. You know, my hope was always that Hayward, Tua play 75-80% of the snaps. And you have 60-something in the game. That probably gives you, you know, Alualu, like you said, 8 or so snaps. But if they're going to play him closer to that 90% mark, which is what they've done and continue to do, then that number is obviously going to shrink.
I thought Walton, and you just hit on it, I thought LT Walton did improve as a run defender last year. I liked the way he was able to use his arms to kind of stack and shed, you know, and if really going back, I think as far back as the preseason, we saw some positive things when it comes to that aspect of his game. Now, when it comes to a pass rusher, and I think even Keith Butler said this last year, need to see more out of you know, getting after opposing quarterbacks, but how much more can he develop in that area? And I guess where I'm going with this is we did see a guy like Johnny Maxey, get promoted to the 53-man roster at the end of last year. And can a guy like Maxey unseat Walton?
You know, I guess it's possible. I think they're cut from a similar cloth where they don't offer a ton as pass rushers, though Maxey's sample size is so small, 50-some-odd snaps scattered really week 16, week 17 last year. But, I think Walton's a little bigger. He's filled out his frame a little more, and I think he's better against the run, stronger at the point of attack. You know, the big difference I think Walton made from year one to year two was staying on his feet. You know, you got to be on your feet to compete. And in year one, the limited action he got, he was on the ground far too much. That's
what
the
about that?
Thing.
What about that KC game? the few snaps that he had to play in that KC game?
His rookie year or this past year?
Rookie year. When Tuitt, was that the game that Tuitt either missed or left? Mm-hmm. I think Tuitt missed that game because I think he had injured himself against Arizona. Him and Big Dan and they were all on the ground.
Yeah, the Arizona game, too, is the one I was thinking of where Walton first came in and was just a hot mess. So I think that's something he's really improved on. And like you said, being able to hold a point of attack. So Walton has a purpose on this team. It's a limited upside, but there is a purpose there. And I think he's a steady guy that is going to give you some solid run snaps. And then on third down, if he has to be in there for whatever reason, if you know injuries were to strike again, you would end up using him a lot of contain principles and let your other guys get after the quarterback.
Do you like this defensive line group better than last year's? I mean, look, Ricardo Matthews, we knew going into what he was and what he wasn't. I thought Matthews did some good things at times on defense, but, I mean, obviously it wasn't enough to be an impact. We saw in that game, that first game against Miami, was it when he had to play quite a few snaps, and just seemed like everything to that to his side when he was on the field was, obviously it wasn't all his fault, but it just seemed like I really struggled in that area. But, I guess what I'm saying is we're not surprised that that Ricardo Matthews wasn't re-signed. And where are you at this group compared to the 2016 unit?
I think it's better. I mean, it's not much different. The names are you replaced Alualu for Matthews, but I do think Alualu is an upgrade over Matthews, who frankly kind of disappointed me last year. I was expecting a little more out of him. But I think just the maturation of Hargrave going from year one to year two, to it, hopefully taking that next jump and kind of, a down year sack-wise, he definitely, I think, left some sacks on the table. I did my one step to take series, and the thing I circled with Tuitt was finishing plays and converting some of those pressures and good sack chances into actual sacks. So I think Tuitt can get back to 6 or 7 sacks this year. And, of course, getting Hayward back, I assume that he was part of the 2016 equation in your question, but obviously getting him back fully healthy is huge. So, no, I think this group is going to be really, really strong.
Yeah, as I mentioned, with Hargrave, second year in his defense now, obviously we continue to keep our fingers crossed and hope that injury that he suffered isn't serious, because that would be a huge blow, because God bless Dan McCullers and Teddy Bear and nice guy and all like that. He hasn't found it yet. And, is there anybody on this roster that could potentially – I mean, is Dan a lock?
I guess I wouldn't say a lock, but kind of, and I wrote about this, I kind of laid into McCullers a little bit a couple weeks ago, because I thought there was going to be someone brought in to compete with him, and really there's nobody. I mean, McCullers got beat out so easily by Hargrave last year. Was that even a battle? I mean, they kind of called it a battle, but Hargrave took it right away, and McCullers seemed to have, offer no resistance to trying to win that starting job. And McCullers just never got angry enough. He does not have the demeanor. People say his effort's bad. His effort's actually pretty good, and his leverage is better than I expected for a 6'6", nose tackle, but he does not have that physicality and demeanor and that vocal mentality that you have to play the defensive line, and that's the big issue with him. So I was hoping this team would at least entertain the idea with a late-round draft pick or a high-priority undrafted free agent. Neither happened, so it sounds like McCullers is going to be that guy, because who else is it going to be? LeVon Hoax, Roy Filon, not going to happen.
He lacks snap-to-snap consistency, too. Mm-hmm. with McCullers as well too. Now there's been some shots up, some people making some comments. So it looks like he's slimmed down and he's slimming down. I've never viewed that as the biggest problem with him.
Mm-hmm.
More technique and more keeping firing off the ball low. And look, when he does drive centers and guards back into the backfield, that's fine. But he goes right past the quarterback or the running back, in the same effort. So he's got to do a better job of being able to locate the quarterback and the ball carrier and those kind of things when in those instances that he does win, and not only win big. I mean, we've seen mm-hmm. Dan McCullers win big on snaps before.
Sure. Yeah, he'll look good in camp. He'll run back centers and one-on-ones, with his bull rush the whole time, and that looks fine. But we need to get Hayward or Tua to punch him in the kidneys or the liver or something, before each snap. Get him angry. That's the thing with me, man. I mean, Joe Green talked about it. When Joe Green talks, you listen. You got to be angry. And, Cam Hayward said last year we need McCullers to be more vocal. He's a big teddy bear, and teddy bears are great off the field, but you can't be a teddy bear on the field. Unfortunately, I think he is.
All right, moving on. Another interesting tidbit that immediately caught my eye from this past week was Chris Mueller from the Beaver County Times writing about giving us really our first kind of full-blown update, I think, if you will, on tackle Gerald Hawkins. And mm-hmm. I was definitely glad to read that. And look, the best tidbits that you get out of the OTA practices are kind of these side stories of what players did during the offseason and mm-hmm. and the occasional them telling reporters where they're lining up at and who they think is doing well and those kind of things. And I think such was the case with Gerald Hawkins. And Mueller reported that Hawkins revealed that he spent some quality offseason time with two former NFL centers. These names really should not be strangers if you watch NFL in general in the past decade and longer, Kevin Mawai and Todd McClure. Now, Kevin Mawai is obviously the higher profile of those two players, but McClure, I don't think he may ever made any Pro Bowls or named first team All-Pro or anything like that. He played a long damn time in the NFL at center, and people say, well, why the heck is Hawkins, who's a tackle, working out with two, former NFL centers? Well, A, you work out with whoever you can that's willing to offer it, and both Mawai and McClure are LSU alum, so that that makes a lot of sense there, and I assume both still reside down in the Baton Rouge, Louisiana area and all like that. But Hawkins said that regardless of his the guys that he worked with, Mawai and McClure both being centers. He said he learned quite a bit from him. He says, I took away every little aspect of the position. Everybody's not built the same. Everybody is not as strong, or everybody's not as fast. But there's always little perks and tools you can use to help you out with your game. And is that a huge deal that he worked out with two former NFL centers? In the grand scheme of things, no. But at least he's getting some kind of mentoring from what I would call very capable former NFL linemen, during the offseason. And, look, this isn't Hawkins' first trip around the rodeo when it comes to OTAs and training camp, because obviously he did not get injured, I don't think, until like the first or second preseason game of last year. So he should, I guess what I'm saying is his feet and his wheels should be pretty much underneath him right now. His head shouldn't be spinning. He should have a fairly decent grasp, if not full grasp, of the offense and his blocking assignments. And, he's got this guy, Mike Munchak, that's coaching him up as well.
Yeah, not a bad group of people to have around you in your inner circle. Yeah, now I'm just happy Hawkins is getting with some guys that played a long time in the NFL. I don't care if you're a guard, center, or tackle. It's good to be able to pick the brains of guys that stayed in the league for a long time, knowing how to take care of your body, just general technique stuff that can be applicable to a tackle or a center. It's not, there were some things that you can certainly carry over. So, I think it was Mone Foster that made a pass about Hawkins' work ethic last week, and I think that's probably one example of it, of him going that extra mile of seeking out or however he got in contact with these guys and be able to learn from them. So a lot of excitement about Hawkins. I know you still think about him playing guard. I know you had that quote in there from Haley in your article about it. I saw you throw that in there. I still think it's going to be a tackle for this year at least, but I think there's a lot of optimism about Hawkins, and I'm really excited to watch this guy play.
Yeah, once again, I made a point to go research, find that quote that I wrote, and hard to believe, man, it's been a little over a year ago Todd Haley had said that about Hawkins. Seems like yesterday, but Haley's direct quote: Gerald Hawkins, that we got from LSU, is a good-looking tackle prospect, potentially a guard prospect, Haley said. A guy that's played at a high level. We're excited about him as a guy we all liked a bunch. So that's of course, where all that kind of has stemmed from, me talking about guard. Now, I thought I made this clear enough in that last time that we talked about this. I just want to see if he's got some flexibility, some position flexibility. I'm not calling for all preseason for a guy like Hawkins to play either one of those two guard positions. And in fact, to be quite honest with each other, the odds of us seeing Gerald Hawkins play a snap at either guard position during the preseason is probably slim and none, and none just left town. but I would. It's just one of those things that you talk about a guy like. I mean, whoever thought back when Chris Hubbard initially latched on. Now obviously he was a little bit more of an undersized tackle coming out of UAB than Hawkins was coming out of LSU. But the guy so far has played. What, all five positions on the offensive line? Now, granted, we hope we never see him play a couple of those positions again. But it goes back to the whole thing with Kelvin Beachum and coming out of SMU, and I think some of Beachum's first snaps with the Steelers during preseason actually came at left guard, and boy, were those ugly. Beachum, of course, went on to actually play some center, for the Steelers during his time in here. So, the whole overall preface of this with Hawkins is: look, we expect Villanueva and Gilbert to be the guys this year. It's going to be definitely interesting to watch Hawkins and Hubbard battle for the right to see who can be the swing tackle this year. I'm just a little bit curious if Hawkins has some position flexibility to him, is all.
Yeah, no, I hear you. I just like razzing you. It's going to get me through the offseason. I need something to harp on. But no, I hear you. And if, that's a good point about, Hubbard, being able to show that flexibility, because he wasn't that guy at UAB. And yeah, I posted a clip yesterday talking about Mike Munchak of a 2013 Tennessee game. And yeah, there's Kelvin Beachum at center. I forgot he played center, and I'm glad he got moved.
You want to talk about firing? You want to fire each other up? A little bit of a hot button, I think, maybe with you. And that's I was asked again on Twitter bright and early in the morning about Arthur Motes, and seems like once every 2 weeks I'm asked about Arthur Motes potentially moving back, making a move to inside linebacker. And I had kind of been working on some bits and pieces of an article and put it together yesterday after was asked that. And look, I don't see it. Look, back when Motes was originally signed, I think one of the first posts that I made outside of the actual signing when it came to Motes was talking about his position flexibility and how it would be an asset. Now, this was back in 2014. This was a guy that, during his 2013 season with Buffalo, he did play some inside. In fact, that season, while he did not play, what did Motes play that year? Something like 340 snaps or something on defense for Buffalo in 2013. He played 170 something against the run that year. Pro Football Focus, I think, even had a stat that he had zero missed tackles that season. But with that said, and I made sure to do this way back when I wrote that post, you go back and watch that tape, it was obvious they did not view him as a three-down linebacker. He came off the field on third downs quite a bit, and when he was targeted in a passing game, which I think I counted 11 times, he gave up 10 receptions for well over 100 yards there. So I understand because of his history in Buffalo, which I keep reminding people was back in 2013, of why they think Moats can move inside. But as I wrote in that article on Thursday, and I'll bang the table about this for the remainder of the offseason, it's outside or nothing for Arthur Moats, and I think you kind of disagree with me on that.
I do. We're going to battle here, Dave. Put your dukes up. Because, you know, I mean, I think anytime...
There's no battle when I know I'm winning.
Oh, my goodness. Pride before the fall, Dave. Isn't that how the saying goes?
Pride. What the hell is that? Can you use it in honor of the spelling bee? Can you use that in a sentence? Dave has no pride.
I can use wrong in a sentence, and Dave is wrong.
Have your say.
I think anytime you talk about a guy moving, of course the odds are unlikely and it's tough to make a case, you know, and this is a whole lot better, I think, than Chazier to safety or Coates to cornerback, so I think we can at least meet the middle ground there. Moats has obviously done it before, so that's, you know, you're moving him, but it's not a completely foreign position. He's a guy that knows his defense. I don't think the transition's going to be that tough to do. And to be clear, no one's saying that he's going to be moving inside permanently, take all his snaps there, or be any sort of starter. Obviously, that's not going
to
happen.
Alex, I'm not saying he can't do it. God forbid it came to a situation where you're down two people in a game. You know, type. I'm not saying that he can't be used in a break the glass kind of emergency situation. Well, but to think that he's actually going to be able to compete, and that's going to be a selling point of his when it comes to making a 53-man roster this year, I just think that's foolish.
But if you want to think about him in that in case of emergency situation, don't you want to get him some reps in camp in case that such a situation comes up? Because what is the weakest position on the depth chart wise on this defense and maybe the whole Steelers team?
I'd much rather have Tyler Matakavich or L.J. Ford on that field or Steven Johnson. You know, you've got three guys, I think, that I would all put out on that field before I would put Arthur Moats out there on the inside.
I just think that, like you said,
would you not? I mean, would you?
Well, not? Is Matakavich going to play both the Mac and the Bucks? I think they're going to play just one spot.
God help us. I hope we don't have to see him out on the field either. And, you know,
sure.
I mean, look, I understand people are still trying to put Tyler Matakavich in the Hall of Fame right now. But, you know, and I think somebody pointed out, you know, look, this is the time of the offseason for feel-good stories. Mm-hmm. Matakavich is working on his lateral agility and this, that, and the other. Yeah, let's hope that he does be able to move a little bit more fluidly, you know, heading into this season, because he is a downhill guy, much like still in my opinion, like Vince Williams is. Now, Vince Williams obviously is a little bit more athletic. I like Vince Williams' kind of see to do just as much as I like Matakavich's. And yeah, people want to point to that game against who was it, Miami last year, and talk about, Matakavich, he came in the game and had all those tackles. Only one of those tackles was meaningful. I mean, the rest of them, they were at the end of successful plays. So somebody's got to get the guy on the ground after he blistered you for a successful play, right? Mm-hmm. So why wouldn't it be the guy playing inside? You know, those kind of things. So in a nutshell, look. Those three guys, Matakavich, Steven Johnson, L.J. Fort, all better special teams players than Arthur Moats. True or false?
That is probably true. I really don't disagree with that. But I just think anything that you could do, given Moats' situation of being kind of on the border of getting cut, the more versatility that you can offer, even if it's a little bit, it's going to help him. It's going to maybe give a team another option. And again, you know, who's your, not that I want Moats to be the, the Mac linebacker, but I think Medicavich is going to be the buck, and Fort, I think, is going to play the Mac, but he might not make the team, so then you have Steven Johnson in there, and I'm just saying I think he could take a couple reps there because he's got the background to do it. I think he'll be fine, generally speaking, against the run, and any little extra you can do when you're competing for a roster spot, I think it's going to help. So, I mean, I think it's not outlandish to think about. Because you bashed Medicavich, and I understand it. I mean, we agree that inside linebacker, the depth is weak, correct?
Right, and I think it's weaker if you add Moats.
No,
to
it's not weaker if you add another guy. It just might not get better. It might not get better.
I think it gets actually weaker. Now, let me ask you this. If Arthur Moats cannot beat out Chicolo on the depth chart, I'm not talking about roster spots here. I'm just talking about as far as pecking order on the depth chart.
Mm-hmm.
If Arthur Moats cannot beat out Chicolo on the outside linebacker depth chart, and odds are pretty damn good that's not going to happen, tell me why he's worth keeping.
Well, again, this is not to make the case that he's going to be kept 100% sure, and the fact that he moves inside a little bit does not mean he's going to get kept either. It's going to be just another thing that he can offer for the team to consider by final cutdown. If there's an injury there, or if, you know, LJ Fort struggles, or Steven Johnson doesn't look good, or whatever the case is. So I'm not trying to say if he moves inside, he's definitely going to stay on the roster, but I could definitely see him taking some reps inside at camp and having that backup option. And if there's an injury or some other, factor that Moats could end up being kept as, you know, a hybrid kind of outside inside kind of guy that can kind of play if you had to, wherever. So I don't think that's unreasonable to think about, just to see. Let's see how he looks inside, because we know he's not, his outside linebacker days are basically over with Chicolo and Adams coming on the scene. I mean, most of them really have a home, so why not give a guy with a background inside linebacker a couple looks there, just to give yourself another option when you make your final 53-man roster considerations.
Will he get a snap or two at inside linebacker during the offseason? I suppose it's possible, but you'll be able to count them on two hands, you know, if it happens. Mm-hmm. And look, I don't hate, I know, unfortunately, on this podcast, I am forced, built Steelers Depot around the fact that I'm not going to take a homerish view on things. I try to look at things black and white, and I love Arthur Moats the person. I love what he brings, on and off the field, his fucking character, everything. Has he been an asset since signing with the Steelers in 2014? Absolutely he has, but make no mistake, he was passed on the depth chart last year by Anthony Chicolo. True or false?
True.
All right. His special team snaps over the course of the last 2 years have diminished. True or false?
True.
They drafted another guy, Keon Adams, in the seventh round. Who, yeah, he's not a lock to make the roster. But if you can show me anything, the ability, special teams ability that Moats has at this point in his career, are you keeping him? True or false?
Well, now you're trying to paint me into a corner here, Dave. I see your tactics. You should be a lawyer. Let me cross-examine here.
I stutter too damn much. That would make my mom proud if I would have went that route, but that was never going to happen.
So you would say
I'd rather put Damian Stafford at inside linebacker.
Oh, come on, Dave.
Than I would at Moats.
Come on, you're ruining your credibility. That law firm's not going to get clients now. Let me ask you. Okay, last thought. Moats is desperate in this situation, right? He's desperate to make the roster.
Absolutely, I think he is, especially with that salary of his right now.
Right,
and I think that's another thing we kind of got to look at with him.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. Keon Adams has a good chance to beat him out. He's younger, cheaper, faster. So Moats is pretty desperate. So I think desperate times call for desperate measures, and moving Moats inside to try to do anything to make that final case and give him, because that's going to be, if Moats plays a little inside and he's going against Keon Adams, who's going to be strictly outside linebacker, strictly right outside linebacker. I mean, if for Moats to have any chance to beat Adams out, he's going to have to prove something different than Adams, right? Something better. And I think
but the fact that he's just not, that's why I made sure to point out the special teams aspects, in that post of mine on Thursday too, Alex, because unless you're starting And if you're a linebacker on this team, and if you're not starting, you better find your ass on special teams.
Right.
And he can't. I don't think he's a liability at this point.
I don't know if he's a liability. I think Adams could be better. But even if he is, then you have to show something different than Keon Adams to have any chance to make this roster. And Adams is not going to play inside linebacker. So if that's one thing Moats could get some reps at that Adams could not, then I think you try to, you know, pester Keith Butler and Mike Tomlin to try to get you to do it, because that might be your only chance of making the roster then, right? I mean, how does Moats make this roster?
I think he needs to beat out. I think he needs to become a better. His pass rushing needs to improve.
That's not going to improve at this point.
How does Moats need to make this roster? What does Moats need to do to make this roster?
Yeah.
He needs an injury to happen.
Oh, okay. But seriously, if you're Arthur Moats and you're thinking about how do I make this roster? How can I improve my chances of making the roster?
Yeah, but
they're not going to get faster.
But he's not going to. I mean, honestly, Alex, you see the lines out there at training camp. Who are you going to try to get snaps to in training camp in these inside linebacker lines?
I mean, well, the guys that are there, sure. But I'm not opposed to giving Moats a couple snaps. Is not going to stunt the development of Matakevich, who you don't like that much as an option, or Steven Johnson, who is what he is at this point, or LJ Ford, who basically is the same guy. There's not any young, thriving rookie waiting in the wings you're robbing playtime from.
There's just, in my opinion, there's no upside whatsoever in giving a guy, in my opinion. I mean, we'll see if it happens. But true or false, Moats makes this roster?
I'm going to say false, but I'm less – again, this is not my
I understand.
That's why I think he should play inside, to give him the best chance possible to get some reps there. I think it's more logical than most of the other conversions we're going to talk about. But, I'm less convinced than you that Moats is not going to make this roster. I think there's a better chance than what you believe he'll make it. But I still think Adams has a – I think Adams is going to take that spot.
And correct me if I'm wrong. I had Moats in my first initial 53, right?
Did you? I do not. I can look it up.
If anything, you probably have less confidence than I do that – or at least as of a few weeks ago that Moats will make the roster. Now, the further we get into this thing, you know, obviously, if health and starting to try to put together where that you know, are we going to have four tight ends? We're going to have three tight ends, you know, those kind of things. The way Moats makes this roster, in my opinion, is if the Steelers keep six outside linebackers and four inside guys. You know, then it becomes okay. Then if you want to say, well, they kept Moats for a break glass in case of emergency situation. Well, I just started off the whole conversation that saying that if you're in a break the glass emergency type situation, throw Moats out there. You know, because he obviously played in Buffalo inside, but. Like I said, I'm not as high on Matakevich as most, obviously, but you know, guys like Steven Johnson too, as an inside linebacker. I mean, we hope to God we don't have to see that happen this year. You know, Matakevich, LJ Fort, but I would put all three of those guys on the field before I would. Arthur Moats, to be quite honest.
And Damian Stafford, apparently. So,
and a safety, yeah. Damian Stafford. Now it's going to get out.
And Donnie Shell Mel Blunt's cowboy hat.
And now it's going to get out there that I want to move Damian Stafford to inside linebacker.
The hot take.
Absolutely. But, I mean, yeah. I just don't see it, Alex. And right now, you know, I'm moving. And even if I can't remember if I had Moats in my initial 53 or not.
You did, by the way.
I did.
What's this?
It's going to be hard. And look, I mean, it comes from the aspect of trying to figure out more about Keon Adams and how this thing's going to structure. But come, you know, unless there's an injury that happens, you know, moving forward, I'm going to. You know, look forward to me not having Arthur Moats in there, because I've also kind of wanted to go back and watch a little bit more of Anthony Chiccolo from last year to make sure and sell myself that you know, he deserves to be ahead of Moats on the depth chart. And I did mm-hmm. that a little bit last night. Mm-hmm. And I am convinced that Chickalo should be ahead of him on the depth chart.
Me too.
And like I said, when you get down to, okay, if you're the fifth outside linebacker, I mean, you're going to, if you're going to have five out, if you're only going to keep five outside linebackers on this 53-man roster, odds are pretty damn good that all five are going to dress on a weekly basis, right?
I'd have to look at the numbers. That fifth guy, he might be on off depending on injuries. You know, you're going to have nine linebackers active on game day, maybe. Yeah.
Right, but for the most part, you would expect 5-2, right? I mean, no guaranteed that you know, 60
yeah.
weeks, but...
It's reasonable to assume, yes.
Okay. Now, if you're number five and you're making what Moats is making and you become the guy that's inactive, that's hard to justify.
Right, yeah, and you got to be a great special teamer, and I think Adams has a good chance to prove himself as a better special teamer than Moats. I mean, again, Moats' path is tough. There's no debate about that, but that I think that's all the more reason to play, move around, and try to do something different, because when you're desperate, you got to try to do something different and do something different than the other guy you're competing with, in this case, Keon Adams, and then getting a couple reps inside to show the team, hey, I can do both. No, you know, no other outside linebacker can play both like me, is going to give you something as small as it is to try to stick on this roster.
Well, then, according to your theory there, then Keon Adams should work inside some too, right?
But, well, I mean, he's not desperate, though, because he's not going to be able to do it. I mean, you'd love those guys to have the flexibility, but as a rookie, you know he's only going to get to play one spot. So Moats, as the veteran with an inside linebacker's background, knows how to do it in a 3-4 defense like he did at Buffalo. He's going to have that. He's going to be able to make the transition easier.
Yeah, let's just move everybody around.
Come on, Dave. I think it makes sense. We'll see what happens.
We'll see what happens. But like I said, if Moats does get training camp snaps inside, you'll be able to count them on. And look, I expect you to have those binoculars blazing out there looking. And I'm sure if Moats gets one snap inside, you're gonna let me know about it, right?
Even if he doesn't, I'm going to say, because you're not going to know. Right. Yeah, I can say, yeah, he started the whole, yeah. He took Chase your spot, Dave. You have no idea.
Yeah. I can foresee you doing that. Speaking of training camp, hey, we're going to have, we got some dates announced, and it was kind of easy to kind of back up, you know, once a preseason schedule came out to say, okay, 15 days from here is probably, you know, because that's the earliest the team can report. Well, lo and behold, you know, our speculation was right on that. The Steelers will report to St. Vincent College in Latrobe on Thursday, July 27th. They'll, of course, do their conditioning test to get all that initial "hi, we're here" sessions with the media out of the way. As I said, take the conditioning test, and then their first official practice that will obviously be open to the public will be on Friday, July 28th. I think the first padded practice is
the third day,
the 30th, right? July 30th, is that right?
Yep.
The 30th or Monday, July 31st will be the first padded practice. Their first off day is Tuesday, August the 1st, the annual night practice at Latrobe Memorial Stadium. Is Friday, August the 4th. They will have a evening practice at Heinz Field this year, or tentatively scheduled to have one on Sunday, August the 6th. Their first preseason game is obviously still Friday, August the 11th, and they will shut camp down with probably a half practice that's not open to the public on Saturday, August the 19th. And that, of course, is one day before their second preseason game against the Atlanta Falcons, right? And that happens on August the 20th. So that's your training camp update or schedule there. Alex Kozora, barring something unforeseen, will be at, how many practices are there? 16?
16. Yep, 16.
So you'll be out there for all 16 of them, and of course we'll have a fundraising effort later on here in a couple more weeks as far as that goes. Obviously, if people don't, he's going regardless of people want to help out or not, but it's something that we've done every year since we started sending Alex to kind of help defray the cost there. All right, what else do we need to talk about before we get out of here on this Friday?
I think that's pretty much everything. I know we're cutting it close on time. Sunquest Goldsmith, we got some good stuff on him on Depot, talking about working his way back. Did we mention Tavon Young getting hurt for Baltimore?
No, we did not. And that's obviously a huge blow for him. I know you were higher on Tavon Young. I like Tavon Young coming out of Temple, but I think you were higher on him than I was. And look, I thought he played well during his rookie season there with Baltimore. What was he, a fourth round draft pick, I think, for Baltimore heading into this offseason? People thought he was going to be the starting slot guy. Now he went down in practice on Thursday with what was reported as a torn ACL. That's it. You know, look, I know they drafted Marlon Humphrey and they drafted, who was it, Canada out of Virginia, I think last year in the sixth round. Like it or not, that's a pretty big blow for Baltimore. Not having a quality guy to play the slot.
Yeah, and he played some outside last year too, and not a lot of guys at his smaller height can do it. But I think he played it well. So yeah, big blow for Baltimore.
All right, I think we are right up against it here, so we hope you enjoyed. If Alex and I agreed, or David and I agreed on every subject, it'd make for a pretty boring show overall. But I hope you enjoyed that debate today, along with the talk about the defensive line depth and all. We'll be getting back after it on Monday. Either David or Alex will join me then. In the meantime, you can follow me on Twitter at Steelers Depot. You can follow my co-host David Todd at David M. Todd. You can follow Alex Kozora at Alex_Kozora. Follow the show at Terrible Podcast. Email the show theterriblepodcast@gmail.com. Once again, look for the Friday night 5 questions on Steelers Depot. I'd like to get some feedback from you on that as well too. And as always, thanks for listening to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave.